Today's opening tip. Yesterday, Donovan Mitchell joined Allen Iverson, our greatest living American, and Michael Jordan as the only guys to drop 50 twice in one playoff series. Richard, what has gotten into Spider Mitchell?
I don't know, man. He smells something out there. He smells something.
Blood? And Is it blood?
It smells good to him. It smells very, like he's saying, I want this right here. So he's looking for these moments. There's a difference between wanting them and looking for them.
Woo, that kid's got great confidence.
Hey, this is knowing your opponent, baby. He's found some confidence in this series.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. I am socially distanced from my friends, a pair of NBA champions, 2016 champ Richard Jefferson, six-time champ Hall of Famer Scottie Pippen. Scottie, the threads look good.
Look outstanding. You look outstanding right now. Thank you.
Celebrating your guy. And here's some other celebration of Kobe Bryant a day after his birthday. And, of course, today, Mamba Day, August 24th, 8/24. According to the president of the L.A. City Council, Figueroa Street here in downtown Los Angeles will soon be renamed Kobe Bryant Boulevard. That's between Olympic and Martin Luther King. If you know Los Angeles, that is the street that not only the Staples Center is on, our ESPN studio is on. I cannot think of a better tribute and a better way for us to drive into work every day.
That is awesome. I mean, well deserved.
I didn't know that, but when I heard Figueroa, I was like, that's a big street to switch the name up, and, and it is well deserved.
Right. That's not just like the little side street in front of the arena. That is a major artery of downtown Los Angeles. Coming up later, we will honor Kobe Bryant with the top 24 Mamba moments. These are some fantastic highlights. Our producing staff has been working on these for a while, so stay tuned for that. But first, Luka Doncic is not afraid. He's not afraid to try, not afraid to shoot, not afraid of success, and not afraid of failure. And there's been some failure. Before last night, Luka had attempted 10 last-minute game-tying or go-ahead shots this season. And before last night, he had missed all 10 of them. And yet, there he was against the Clippers, the game in overtime, the momentum of his first ever NBA playoff series in the balance. And no fear. First at the 50-second mark, Doncic drives by two-time Defensive Player of the Year Kawhi Leonard, just him, to hit the floater. Woo! Then this spin move to give Dallas the lead with 19 seconds on the clock. Yeah, no biggie, just going to do that there. Marcus Morris then hits a clutch shot of his own after that. Watch this. He shoots up Maxi Kleba's shoes after, because of course he did. And in most games, that would have been the winner. But then Luka took the inbounds with less than 4 seconds on the clock, got the switch, and then, well, as Mike Breen put it,
three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
That got the two bangs. Bang, bang. I mean, my lord, through the legs, multiple direction changes before launching from 28 feet out. That's the second longest playoff buzzer beater ever. The shot not only tied the Mavericks and Clippers at two apiece in this first round playoff series, it capped off a 43-point, 17-rebound, 13-assist night for Doncic, who played a career-high 46 minutes on an ankle he'd sprained only 40 hours earlier. You can see here in the locker room, Luka celebrated accordingly, and on Twitter, too, from Steph Curry. Sheesh, Luka Doncic, that's ridiculous. Game blouses. LeBron James joined in. Bradley Beal. Trae Young. Legendary Boston Globe columnist Bob Ryan said, quote, I've seen every great player of the last 60 years, and Luka takes my breath away. And our friend Scott Cacciola from the New York Times, just imagine what he could do with two sprained ankles. Steph had actually been a virtual fan for this game. His brother Seth was one of the many Dallas players to step up in the absence of Kristaps Porzingis, who had been sidelined with a sore knee. But those players, they were good. Doncic was just insane. Here is coach Rick Carlisle.
He's a guy that lives for these moments and is completely fearless. He sees the game in 6G. It's not 5G, it's 6G. It's another level beyond what most people see it. So just a very, very special player. And this game today was from another planet.
And there's that word again, fearless. The irony, of course, is that fear is a big reason Luka plays for the Mavericks at all. Remember back when he was drafted, the scouting report was that while he'd been dazzling playing in the EuroLeague, winning Final Four MVP honors as a 19-year-old, there was, yes, a fear. He was already close to his ceiling, might not be able to adapt to the NBA game, and accordingly, he didn't go number one overall, or even number two. but third. And even then, it was Atlanta who selected him, then traded him to Dallas in exchange for picks that became Trae Young and Cam Reddish. We were on the air with The Jump that night, and at the time, all I kept saying was how striking it was to watch multiple front offices choose to play it safe, drafting good players who'd gone the conventional college route instead of taking a shot at greatness with Luka, even if it was, indeed, more risky. Fast forward 2 years, and it's the franchise that showed no fear that was rewarded and is set up for even greater rewards ahead. Luka Doncic has no fear, and isn't that fun for the rest of us? Scotty, Luka magic. Does it have you believing that the Mavs could upset the Clippers and win this series?
Wow. I mean, he's playing amazing basketball. I mean, especially when you talk about how he's dominating the Clippers. He's dominating some of the best defensive players that we've ever seen in our game. When you talk about Kawhi, when you talk about Paul George, when you talk about what the Clippers have done as a team overall, I mean, his confidence level has shot up in this series, knowing that, you know, he's playing the number two seed in the West. You can't tell by looking at it. I mean, to me, he looks like he's the best basketball player on the basketball court. But not only that, he's playing with the most confidence. And that's what's got the Dallas Mavericks in this series.
That is a serious sentence on a court with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on it.
Well, let's say Kawhi Leonard. We're not going to include Paul George in that conversation, not quite yet. But let's be really honest. Like, even you said, he was 0 for 10. People were wondering how the Dallas Mavericks were the seventh seed. It's because they struggled to close games. Luka Doncic is one of the most talented guys we've ever seen, especially at this point in time in his career. But he was 0 for 10 before that shot. And for him to still be so fearless and want that ball, because he knows eventually it's going to turn around. He's going to start making these shots. And I believe in Luka. Do I necessarily believe in the Mavericks? I don't think, not quite yet. Because I think eventually the Clippers will start to turn around. They will start to do some things. Trey Burke, who has been playing great, played amazing last game. Do I necessarily believe in Trey Burke to give those type of contributions consistently? No. But I believe in Luka, and I think the Mavericks have a chance. But I still stand by and think the Clippers will.
Okay, so to your point, going into this series, I think people would have had a conversation about whether Luka is above Paul George as the, quote, best player in the series. Kawhi first, definitely, but then where you would put Luka or Paul George going into this series might have been more a question. I know for the first four games, we'll talk about that in a second. What about around the league? So if I was going to say you had to win a game tonight, I'm not talking about building for the future, you have to win a game tonight. How many players are you taking ahead of Luka Doncic? Because he's a 21-year-old in his first ever playoff series, and if you give me anything less than 5 or 10 guys, I'm going to say that's something.
No, I think, you know, let's take KD and Steph, Clay, like guys that aren't in.
Would you take Clay?
No, but I'm just saying. Well, yes, because Clay in game wins, we talk about game six Clays.
Clay
that man has done some absurd things. He has made a lot of people
sleep. I'm taking him over anyone.
But my thing is this. He hasn't faced an elimination game.
Right.
That was a very important win, but he hasn't faced an elimination game. So I'm not being critical of him. I'm just saying that he's still top five.
Right.
I think there's the Bronze, there's a Kawhi's, there's a few guys that you would take over him, but he is yet to face an elimination
game. I'm just saying, though, he is up there.
And I think based on your question, what's going on inside of the bubble, there's not too many players that you would take over him. Mm-hmm. There's obviously guys that are playing well, Donovan Mitchell, Lillard, but, hey, it's going to be hard to look over him.
Hard.
Ooh, all right, I do want to circle back to Paul George. After struggling in games 2 and 3 of this series, he had another rough day yesterday, guys, scoring 9 points, 3 of 14 from the field. Now, earlier today, Doc Rivers said that he wants George to shoot even more. Quote, I feel very confident about PG. Scotty, you weren't worried about Paul George when I asked you about him on Friday. You were saying just focus on the defense. Are you starting to worry about him now?
Well, I'm still thinking that if he get his defense going, he'll be better offensively. Mm-hmm. I think Luka Doncic is dominating him. I mean, I don't think neither him or Kawhi has taken on that challenge to say, hey, we're going to stop this kid. You know, using your fouls up, telling your big mans how to clog the lane. I mean, to me, he passes the ball when he wants to. And he's laughing at him when he passes it because it takes two or three of them to stop him.
No, I completely agree with Scotty. It's like he is by far the second best player in this series.
Luka
is. And the if you're not shooting the ball well, just be like, all right, I'm playing defense nonstop.
Right.
Like, my goal is to try and slow this kid down, because I don't think anybody's going to be able to stop him. But Paul George right now, it's either physical or mental or both, which is a bad combination. If you're not there mentally, if you're not there physically. So I don't know what it is. Do I believe in Paul George? Yes, I believe in him. I believe that over the course of winning a championship, you're going to have 2-3 bad games, bad has, foul trouble. But right now, I think there's some mental aspects to it. And I don't know about physically, but definitely mental.
All right. Scottie Pippen says that he can see Luka smiling at Paul George when Paul George comes to defend him. That's not what you want. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Sixers. They have been swept in the first round. Richard Jefferson is going to serve up some blame pie. Woo. First, though, here's a new daily segment on The Jump called The NBA at the Symphony. Today's maestro, none other than Luka Doncic. Enjoy.
Make or miss league.
It's a make or make.
It's a make or miss league.
Thank you, CJ. You say that 10 times fast. Make yams. The Raptors completing their first round playoff series against the, I'm sorry, I'm so overcome by the fact that they swept. I can't get the word Nets out even. This is the first time the Raptors have ever swept anyone, ever. It just happened to be Brooklyn. Thanks in large part, a couple of emphatic slams. Scotty, how scary are these Raptors?
They are very scary and surprising to know that that's their first sweep, being that they're defending champ.
I know. It's coming out of my mouth. I'm like, what? First time ever.
100 bench points. What? How's that possible?
Miss complacency. Trey Burke continuing his nice first round series. Check out this crossover and finish on, oh, that's Kawhi Leonard.
Ooh. Ooh.
Richard, you said Burke's got to come down to earth, but come on, it's pretty good.
No, that's impressive. Look, I was in Utah when he was drafted, and they believed that he could be a high-level scorer. He was a great scorer at Michigan. But, like, that's the part where I get a little nervous. Is you're depending on Trey to give you 20-plus, but I think he's been playing great, and he deserves all the praise he's been getting.
Much love to that young man. He's definitely playing some great basketball.
Yeah.
Nice. You, by the way, have been played everywhere, Richard.
Everywhere. That's. I did it just so I could be prepared for this job.
Make seniority. So prepared. Mercury Lynx, Diana Taurasi, thought she got all ball, but she still called for the foul. And then this is amazing. She says to the ref, I will see you in the lobby later. Only in a bubble, first of all. Scotty, have you ever been this angry at an official?
Yes.
Yes.
I must say, I think I tossed the chair out on the court.
Mm-hmm. I've called that.
I remember that.
I tried to throw the ball.
But you have not said, I'll see you in the lobby later because you're not playing a bubble. Miss Trash Talk, Donovan Mitchell, driving in, gets rejected by Paul Millsap, and then has some words, gentlemen. Words there. Jazz inbound on the next play. Mitchell hits a three in Millsap's face.
Ooh.
That's how you back it up, right, RJ?
Yeah, he wants this, man. My guy, 4 p.m. Paul, I love you, man. But we got to talk about this, man. We got to talk, Paul. Like
4 p.m. Right. Paul.
Yeah, 4 p.m. Paul. That's that. Pete, Paul Millsap, four, whatever. You guys.
Paul is aging, baby. Paul is aging.
Yeah, he's aging. But that's my guy.
It doesn't sound like that.
4 p.m. Paul.
The Sixers, nobody should want to be your guy.
No one.
The Sixers were swept out of the playoffs yesterday, which means it is time for our friend Richard Jefferson, who is indeed extremely qualified for this job, to serve up some blame pie. So, Richard, who is the most to blame for the Sixers' first round exit?
It is 50% front office. 50% front office. Look, love Elton Brand. Hate to say he's my guy, but that is my guy. But some of the moves, and he inherited a little bit of a mess and some of the things that they had done before, but bringing in Al Horford, I know the Jimmy Butler thing, they weren't going to be able to bring him back, right? So that
was a choice.
I think they
weren't going to bring him and Tobias Harris back. They decided to stay with Tobias.
I think Jimmy was going to be on his way someplace else. Let's just put it that way. And ultimately, that Al Horford move did not work. They thought that they could have two bigs that would open up the floor, that could shoot, that would allow Ben Simmons to do it. It didn't work out. And so you start to see this, and you're like, there's been injuries, there's been so much stuff, but the front office, if you're not making the right picks and the right plays, and we know about what they did with Markelle Fultz, could have had Jason Tatum, actually gave away stuff, mm-hmm. right? And so to me, they've just made too many mistakes, and you start to see that this team is not well put together.
I'm not agree with Richard. You know, when I look at this team, and I think we've been talking about them for the last 3 years with Embiid and Simmons, I think it's came to life now that mm-hmm. Embiid does not really fit this sort of new era of basketball in terms of you running your offense through him. So hopefully they can see that. I think in terms of Ben Simmons is on the court this series, I don't think that they get swept. I think that this team can rally around a player like Ben Simmons when I don't see them rallying around Embiid style.
Is Ben Simmons' health in your blame pie, or who else is next? Who
oh, that's it. 25% the health of the stars. It's okay. Hard to really see what a team is capable of doing if their best players aren't healthy. Could you imagine if we took AD off the Lakers right now? If you take a team's second best player off a team, it's going to look completely different, especially with the matchup that they had. But to me, I just look at Ben Simmons, and he's had the foot injury, he had the back injury, now he had the knee injury. We know all about Joel Embiid's history of injury. So it's just like right now, if your guys aren't on the floor, you can't give the best product. Not very good continuity. There's just too many issues if your best players can't stay healthy.
Yeah, so you trade them both?
No, I just think
we'll get to that in a minute. I want to know who's in the last quarter of blame pie, and then I'm going to ask you for what to do next. So give me your last quarter, and then we're going to move. Scotty, you're going to have the floor after this.
I'm going to say Brett Brown is the last piece. Now, he wasn't given a whole lot to work with as far as building a smooth team. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you look at their road record, they were one of the best teams in the NBA at home and one of the worst teams in the NBA on the road. That's just a lack of consistency. And this is a veteran team. This is a team with talented guys that should be able to at least play 500 on the road. They were struggling to win any games on the road. And so that doesn't surprise me that, you know, the way they're playing right now or the way they just played, this was kind of like a neutral court that they weren't going to play well in this bubble come crunch time.
All right. So, Scotty, now I want to get to it. You have options, right? Fire Brett Brown. Fire Brett Brown and Elton Brand. Just get rid of Elton Brand. Make some sort of trade that's either trading away Joel, Ben. You have everything in front of you. What would you do if you were running this team or if you own this team?
Well, I think you make it pretty simple. I think you brought in Al Horford. You paid him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Let's start him.
Okay.
Obviously, that would take moving Embiid on. But I think for you to be a part of what basketball is doing today, playing small ball, playing with a guy like Ben Simmons as your big, a guy like Al Horford who's very versatile, now you're putting yourself in a position to compete. Every night that this team goes out and they're putting Embiid in awkward situations, putting pressure on your defense. You got a 7-footer out there on the floor. It puts a lot of pressure on you to be able to win when your defense is vulnerable night in and night out because your bigs can't play pick and roll. And that's where teams target them at.
And I just want to stress, you're not saying Al Horford is a better individual player than Joel Embiid. You're just saying he's a better fit next to Ben Simmons.
I think he's a better fit for Ben Simmons, but I also think he's a great piece for them to get better.
Yep.
That's what I really see. It has to be him or Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. I think you get rid of Embiid.
Yeah, no, it's tough because when you look at these contracts, Al Horford's contract's going to be tough to move. Tobias Harris's contract's going to be tough to move. So you're really looking at Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons that you can get the most value. You can get picks. You can probably get an all-star for one of those guys. And so, I personally would keep Joel Embiid and then try because he's such a unique player and then build or maybe get a point guard. Maybe
would
get
you trade Ben?
I would trade Ben. I would trade Ben. I don't think there's any right answer because neither of them can stay on the court for 75 games. So that makes it more difficult. But I would trade Ben and try and get pieces around Joel Embiid just because it's harder to find a Joel Embiid than it is to find a Ben Simmons.
Well,
Ben Simmons is unique.
I think in today's game, you don't need
I know.
You want you some Ben Simmons.
I agree. I can see that part too.
But here's what's complicated. Going either way, and that is a gamble, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And here's the other thing. I want you guys to look at these numbers. So 2 years ago, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, they played on the court just fine.
Yeah.
2 years ago, they were plus 15 in the minutes they played together. Last year, that got cut in half. This is all from a Tim Bontemps story today. And he noted all these numbers, and he said that got cut in half last year. Then this year, It's half a point. When they play together on the court, they're a half a point advantage per 100 possessions. And Tim's point was, what has changed? It's not that the two players have changed. They're the same. It's not that Brett Brown has changed. The coach is the same. It's the players around them that have changed. The front office made some significant moves, taking shooters away from them.
That's why they got the biggest piece.
Right?
50% to the front office.
So I would just say, and by the way, I think Elton Brand is one of the most well-liked guys around the league. But you look at the track record, and if you are going to do something as big as trading away Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid, I think you want to take a deep breath and really think about who is the person to do that and whether you actually need to do it at all, because those numbers are pretty striking. All right, coming up, it is Kobe Bryant Day, so we figured we would count down the top 24 Mamba moments for you right here on The Jump. You know you want to see these plays. Scottie Pippen's ready. He's wearing the Kobe threads today. Stick around.
Yeah.
This is Kobe Bryant.
This is Jam Session coming at you.
Oh, I think I gotta go get him.
81 points for Kobe.
Final seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Are you made for this?
These are the type of moments that I live for.
You gotta show me.
Five of them. I told you you're gonna get it, man.
You gotta show him.
Man, I've been hearing Kobe Bryant's voice and clips over the last 2 days on his birthday yesterday and then today, 8/24, Mamba Day, and it's just every time I expect him to just walk right back over there. He literally was 20 feet over there in that studio, I want to say maybe 10 months ago, and I just still think he's
walking
back in. Welcome back. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by Richard Jefferson, Scottie Pippen. It is 8/24. You know we had to declare it Kobe Bryant Day here, too, on The Jump. In honor of the legend, we are counting down the top 24 Mamba moments in the show, so let's get it started. Scotty says he believes he's going to be in one of these highlights.
All of them, probably.
Number 24, Kobe wins the 97 dunk contest as a rookie, people.
High schooler.
Woo!
Come on now.
Hey, that's when Kobe first brought that flamboyant style, kind of letting you know. I got this.
Yeah, everything that he did in like that dunk contest leading up, because it was like, you know, there was a lot of hype his rookie year. And all of a sudden he's like, okay, well, he can win the dunk contest. All right, he's got that checked.
That's why I said to John Morant this year, if Kobe can do it as a rookie, so could you. Number 23, Kobe performs a spike block on Ray Allen.
Oh.
Jesus Shuttleworth. Nope, get out of here.
Oh, he was mad. He took his candy. Give me my candy back.
That young man took pride on playing hard on both ends, so losing that ball was nothing to him.
Oh,
give me that.
Number 22, Kobe on Dwight Howard. Take a listen to this.
Oh, poor Dwight.
Here's because of this man, Kobe Bryant, can take over. Posterizes Dwight Howard.
It's the first time I ever got dunked on, and it had to be Kobe Bryant, so... Every time I see him come down the lane, I just get flashbacks, and hopefully it won't happen again.
I baptize him. I turn him into a defensive force.
Here's another look from a different angle. This one right into your living room.
Wow.
Not the last time that Kobe would dunk on Dwight.
No.
Ooh. Not even just on the court.
Oh.
But Rachel. Nasty.
Wow. I'm not wrong.
No, you're 100% right. I just imagine you took my line. You got to jump, Dwight. But he knows now. Look how skinny Dwight was then.
Number 8 was a bad man.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's the real conversation.
Number 21.
24.
Ooh. Kobe's clutch buckets against the Blazers in 2004. Our producer, Michael Bodmer, has to look away during this highlight.
Was that when he was the Kobe stopper?
I had the Kobe stopper on.
Had the Kobe stopper on him. Look at that.
Scotty.
Hey, man, that kid broke my heart so many times. I see how people feel when they talk about Michael Jordan.
Right.
Kobe was that guy for me.
Oh, yeah, that's very well put. Number 20, Kobe's one-handed alley-oop against the Sixers. This is 2000.
You know what's crazy is that as you guys watch these highlights at home, notice how many different ways he could jump. Like, he was dunking on people going off his left leg, off his right leg, off one, twos, like, three, six. Like, his body control was just so absurd.
Number 19, Kobe's baseline dunk against the T-Wolves. This is 2003. Listen in here.
Horn, Fisher, nice rotation to Bryant. Buckle up for Kobe Bryant! Kobe Bryant just sucked the gravity out of the target center. What a play!
He might have just injured that shoulder a little bit more. The windmill slam.
You realize how difficult it is to do that.
That brought everybody out of their seat.
Going in over the 2 7 footers. Oh my goodness.
Yep. I ain't seen too many reverse dunks.
Uh-uh.
Number 18, Kobe hits a turnaround three with his off hand.
Jerk. This was the ones where, like, guys kind of got mad. We're like, Kobe, we get it. Right. Like don't just switch to the left hand and then all of a sudden start scoring 30 with your left. Ugh.
It's like the Princess Bride. When you got
the opposing owner standing up.
Gotta give it to him.
Kobe was that for you. Kobe was that for the Dallas
That's
Mavericks.
Pretty awesome. Special there.
Woo. Yeah. Woo. Yeah, Scotty had to see how the other half lived. Number 17, Kobe dunks on Yao Ming because of course he did.
Well,
Yao Ming, 7'4".
So when Yao Ming first came into the league, it was always about who was going to get him first.
Right.
I think Steven Jackson might have been the first one. Mm-hmm. But then after that, like Kobe, this was one of the best that you saw on Yao during his time in the league.
That's only number 17. This is number 16. Kobe takes the Jazz to school. This is 2002. Look at this.
Oh.
Come on.
That's amazing.
Neither did the Jazz.
No.
Look at this.
Well, AK-47. Where you at?
How did he? See, a lesser man would have passed the ball.
As Kobe said, why would I pass it when the best person could shoot it? Number 15, Kobe dunks on Ben Wallace during preseason of his rookie year. Sound up on this one.
They haven't taken him out as a sub yet. Here we got a dribble drive, change of direction by Bryant. Slam dunk.
Woo! I think that's what the fans came to see. And you talk about elevation. Chick, he went up to the rafters before he decided to put somebody on a poster.
That is not a charging foul.
Kid.
Four-time Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
In preseason as a rookie. Number 14, Kobe's buzzer beater against the Heat, 2009.
You know, I don't even think those guys were mad. I don't think they were just like, look.
No.
I mean, they don't look happy.
No, but I remember when D. Wade hit that one shot. Remember at the end, he ended up having a shot like this towards the end.
Yes.
And he mentioned this shot from Kobe.
Yes, he did.
I mean, it's one thing about Kobe. He always stepped up in the clutch and was never afraid of the clutch moment.
Absolutely. Keep shooting. Number 13, Kobe's MVP revenge dunk on Steve Nash in the 2006 playoffs. You know what that was about.
You know what that was. He knew it. And Steve Nash didn't take it personal. That's why he tried to come to the Lakers.
Oh, wow.
Took something there.
It took something there. Look at this. That's why I'm saying, like, Pip, you know this. Like, jumping off 1-2 from that angle, like, just the amount of versatility that his athleticism, was just a...
Kobe athleticism was super. Not too many guys can jump off 1 foot and have a 2 foot takeoff as well.
And power and body control. Look at him.
Left and right.
2003, this is MSG. This is during a 9-game streak of 40-point games for Kobe.
Yeah. And you know, everybody got robbed off the plane like an MSG.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
Wow.
Another thing that's trippy about Kobe, Kobe's like 6'5". Kobe wasn't 6'8". He wasn't 6'8" like
no,
you.
No.
Kobe's like 6'5½", 6'6". Yeah.
Richard, I'm going to interrupt you to talk about this bang out in the 2002 finals.
Notice I wasn't on the court.
Where are you?
Well, I was sitting there watching him like, oh my God,
from
I'm playing
bench.
Against Kobe Bryant. Todd McCullough, we ain't seen Todd since. We ain't seen Todd McCullough since. That's my guy, though. Shout out Todd McCullough. But man, I don't think he didn't even hang on the rim on that one.
Wow. He just threw it.
Ooh.
Scotty, we've learned during this show, if Richard says that's my guy, he's about to say something bad about you. Number 10, Kobe's first All-Star appearance in 1998. Scotty, were you surprised he came at MJ like he did in this one?
Not at all. This kid was waiting on this moment, waiting on this stage. and waiting on Michael Jordan to get in front of him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I remember this. Look at this. Ooh.
Ooh.
Remember, and MJ said in the last chance, he's like, you know that Laker boy ain't going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
You know he ain't going to pass. He's going all one-on-one. And I was like watching, I was like, really, MJ? MJ saying that about somebody?
Oh, number man. Nine, Kobe improvising against on the break. This is against the Nuggets in 2003.
They need some help.
Long run out by Kobe Bryant. Behind. Oh! What did I just see?
You just saw what Kobe does best, and that's bring people to their feet, change direction, behind the back, and then the finish. I mean, the finish. Oh, my goodness, number eight. Don't hate like that. Just go ahead and, oh, okay, go ahead and throw it down, big fella.
Man, that was my guy, Vincent Yarbrough, the 1998 High School Player of the Year. I ain't seen him since, but he was, no. Vincent Yarbrough, Vincent Yarbrough was 6'7", athletic. He was a stud. That was my guy. That was my guy back in the day, man. Vincent, shout out, man. God bless, man.
We're not done. Coming up, we've got the top eight Mamba moments because of scouting notes. Number eight was a bad man. We're going to honor Kobe on Mamba Day. Stick around. Relive all of Bean's most iconic highlights right after this break. Eight more. Our next WNBA matchup is tomorrow. The Fever taking on Breonna Stewart and the Storm at 10 o'clock Eastern on ESPN2 and the ESPN app. Here are a number of WNBA players talking about what Kobe Bryant meant to them in their own words.
Kobe meant a lot, and he still means so much to me.
He impacted my life from the moment I met him. We talked a lot. A lot of times it was beyond just basketball.
He was an incredible example of the types of figures that young women need in their lives to believe that they can do the things that everyone can do.
I just cherished every conversation I had with him. These little moments that you take for granted because you think you're going to have them forever.
You were to say or ask who was our biggest supporter, it was Kobe.
As a women's basketball player, it meant so much to me that he was fighting so hard to have us recognize and make things more equal between the two games.
He was a part of the women's game and definitely pushing it forward, but also bringing awareness to it, bringing respect to it, and allowing us to respect ourselves.
He had all of the respect for us, and I think that was key in us moving upward and on.
You know, everybody's wearing the orange hoodie now, but Kobe was wearing the orange hoodie from the beginning back in even 97.
I think we can continue to carry on Kobe's legacy by, you know, making sure we leave it all on the court.
Just the way that he gave everything he had to perfecting everything it took to accomplish his goals is something that I admired, and that's something that I learned from him, is just that desire to be the absolute best.
Kobe has left a blueprint for all of us of what he was passionate about, and we have to definitely take that blueprint and do something with it.
Take away from the men's.
Welcome back to The Jump. That was really, Kobe did so much for the WNBA, and it's hard not to think of what was left undone with Gigi. I mean, she absolutely intended to be the best player that league had ever seen. Yeah. And from what I had known of that young woman in her short time with us, she was going to follow through just the way her father did. And so hearing the women of the WNBA pay tribute, it's really special. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm still hanging with Richard Jefferson and Scottie Pippen. And in honor, indeed, of Kobe Bryant Day 824, we are continuing our countdown of the top 24 Mamba moments of his career. So last segment, we gave you 24 through 9. And now we give you the final eight. Number eight, Kobe hits two clutch buckets against the Suns in the 2006 playoffs, guys.
Oh, the high floater. Yeah, these are the Laker teams that people don't really remember. Like, this
This was Shaq was already in Miami.
Yeah, this was before they went on that
year that Shaq won in Miami.
Yeah, the back-to-back champion. This was before, in between the three and the two.
Mm-hmm.
These was those years where, you know, they were getting it going.
And yet he still found time to crush the Suns.
To dominate the league.
Number seven, 2000 Finals, Game 4, Lakers-Pacers. Shaq fouling out of the game, Kobe took over on what he called a throbbing ankle, still led them to a 3-1 lead over Indiana.
This is Kobe Bryant's being his best. You know, he lived for these moments where he had the ability to control the whole basketball game.
I love you, Mark Jackson, but you had no business out there guarding Kobe Bryant, especially at that point in time in your career, my guy. Love you, Mark, but no, you my guy.
Anyone who's your guy, character assassination follows. Number six, 2005, Kobe outscoring the entire Mavericks team in three quarters. The whole team.
Look at.
He had 62 60, points. Yeah.
Wow.
The entire Mavs team had 61 points.
You saw Mark Cuban applauding him earlier in the these highlights. Like Kobe, like what you guys did to the league, like Kobe individually did it to the Suns and the Mavs. Like that, those were his two teams that he just used to destroy.
Look at him. He's like, let me hear it. Number five, game seven of the Western Conference Finals 2000. Kobe finds Shaq for that iconic alley-oop. Scotty, your Blazers, 16-point lead at one point during that game. We've talked about it. Just how devastating is that?
Oh, this was tough. I mean, we got caught in the trap. It was nothing but purple and gold in there, and we just, like, that fourth quarter, we just lost it. You know, we could feel the change of the momentum right there in the third quarter. And when they came out, I mean, it was a different ball game. But Kobe Bryant was just, he was a different player. I mean, obviously, people talk a lot about Michael Jordan. I didn't get a chance to kind of cross those lines playing against Michael, but I played against this young man, and he torched me. He really did torch me.
You were at different stages of your career as well. I'm just going to throw that in there. I know you're too modest to say that, but I am. On number four, game seven, the 2010 finals. This was incredible. Remember, 2008, the Celtics came from behind and beat the Lakers. 2010, the Lakers come from behind, beat the Celtics in game seven. It was remarkable.
Now, this game was awesome. This is the second, the fifth time. How much he depended on his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and
Ron Artest.
Ron Artest. But I'm saying that just the growth of Kobe, right? Like, he didn't overdo it. He did, like, guys, he let other guys step up, put him in the position. That was an awesome moment for him.
Number three, April 12th, 2013, Kobe rupturing his left Achilles tendon against the Warriors. And then you know what happens next. He walked back on the court, hit not one, made both free throws on a snapped Achilles, and then walked off the court. Scotty, what kind of heart was this?
Wow. Amazing. First of all, I would have been afraid to go back out there because I probably would have missed the free throws and had to play defense. But, I mean,
that's a good point.
What a, you know, just watching Kobe's career and his poise and his maturity and watching how he's grew and just.
To this is his final game. 60 points. 60!
Amazing.
Shaq said after I talked to Shaq on the court at the end of this, he goes, I challenged him to get 50 and the Emmer effort got 60.
Yeah, and if it would have gone to overtime, he would have had 70, 100%.
No, I think he would have went for that 100.
100? He would have kept it going. No, but man, there's just certain guys,
that
man,
that there.
You can't write these type of sports stories, man.
You get emotional here, people. Number one, Kobe scoring 81 against the Raptors, 2006. Sorry, Jalen Rose. This is one of the single greatest one-game performances in NBA history. 81 on 28 of 46 shooting. That's incredible.
What? I ain't got no words.
Man. Yeah,
I'm just watching.
I mean, you can say, look, there's people who say, whoa, the Raptors kept coverage and blah, 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 blah.
No.
If it was easy, someone else would have done
it. So Luke Walton said this. I'll say this. He was like, you remember that 60-point game that he had against Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
The difference is we needed him to continue to. He didn't play in the fourth quarter when he had that 60. Right. They needed him to play in this fourth quarter. So it was like every point that he scored of those 81 was needed up until the last minute.
Mm. Well, look, there's not enough that we can ever say about him as a player. Obviously, the hole that was left in the league, in the city of Los Angeles, and in our country, the story of the United States in the last 20 years, the story of the NBA, the story of Los Angeles. You cannot talk about American culture without talking about Kobe Bryant. We will be talking about him for many decades to come. We miss you, Kobe, and really, the way that his family and Vanessa have been able to hold up under all of this and losing Gigi as well. All of our hearts are with you. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit more about Kobe's old team, the Lakers, now heading into a series with the Trail Blazers game four. What adjustments do the Blazers need to make to stay in there? Stick around for that. You're watching The Jump. Thursday on ESPN, we will definitely have two games for you. The Eastern Conference semifinals begin with Game 1 of Celtics-Raptors, followed by Game 6 of Clippers-Mavericks. Now, if the Nuggets form a Game 6 against the Jazz, we'll have that too. So you could get two. You could get one free. It's like buy two, get one free. It might happen. We don't know. Let's move on to Lakers-Blazers. In their Game 3 victory for the Lakers, LeBron and AD combined for 67 points, and they lived at the free throw line. Dame still nursing that dislocated finger in his left hand, still scored 34 points. So, Scotty, what adjustments do your old Portland Blazers team need to make in Game 4?
Well, I think they need to have better shot selection. I feel like they were speeded up by the Lakers pressuring their defense, forcing the ball out of Dame's hands. Mm-hmm. Other guys got shots, and I just feel like they just took shots a little bit too early. I feel like they should have got back into their offense. I know Dame got off to early starts, getting mm-hmm. shots in their offense early. They tried to rely on that in the next game. The Lakers made a big adjustment and took them out.
Yeah, look, I want to give a bunch of credit to the Lakers defense because ultimately the Portland Trailblazers is one of the hottest teams coming into the postseason, but they've held them to 39% shooting every single yep. game. That's hard to win anywhere, any league, any postseason, any bubble. It's hard to win if you're shooting 39% consistently. If they get that up to 43, 44%, which is, you know, modest, then I think that'll be the key to helping get in the win, getting back into the series.
Is that tiredness, though? I mean, remember, they needed to play so hard just to get there, right? So you've got certified shooters on that team, not just Dame, but CJ Mello. But when you've been playing so hard every night, does that affect your shot?
I think the fatigue factor is definitely wearing on them. I mean, it's a lot is on Dame's shoulders. He has to bring the ball up, but also he has to score 30 to 40 points to keep them in this game. So I think the fatigue is going to wear on them, and it is starting to wear on them. You see the Lakers are now starting to push their defense up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's the same thing. But my thing with them is that this is where you get no travel. You don't have any other outside distractions. So you would imagine that they would have, even you can recover over the course of a series. You know, you saw Dame didn't have to play in the fourth quarter of the one game so that's where you can start to get that recovery. So hopefully he's starting to get some recovery. He can get back into that rhythm and then we can see like a high scoring, you know, competitive game.
All right. Well, we will be back tomorrow. We will talk all about it. NFL Live is next. And shout out to the new crew, Laura, Marcus, Mina, Dan, Keyshawn, we are happy to have you as our new neighbors on this side. Take it away, my friends. Good luck to you in this new venture.